Nathan, you're always a back to follow. Okay. Afternoon, everyone. So this project is was done in collaboration with Suparna Kalgati, who's a master's student in industrial engineering at RIT, and Ben Darling, who's a PhD student in the Munsell lab. Okay, so the situation is this. You're a general contractor, you're building an office building. Okay, so the carpenters come in, they put up the framing and put up the drywall. Then you have a painter come in, and the painter will use a spray gun to put down the first base coat of paint. And then the electrician and the plumber come in, and they put up the fixtures. And of course, you know how plumbers and electricians are. They're always going to bang up your walls. So you have to bring back the painter again with a roller this time to touch up all the places that they messed up. And so because in one case you have a sprayed base coat, in another case you have a rolled touch-up coat, you have what's called the touch-up problem in painting. And so here's the touch-up problem. You have the same paint in both cases, both places, but the base and the touch-up regions look different in appearance, and they can look different in appearance in a variety of different ways. They can be different in lightness. If it's a colored paint, it can be different in color, and they can be different in texture and gloss. And this is a multi-million dollar issue in commercial painting, maybe a billion dollar issue, I don't know, maybe if someone from the painting industry can tell me whether I should change that to a B. And so there's this general, this basic question of, you know, what causes the problem and how can it be minimized? And so, you know, you may think of white paint on a flat wall as, you know, something that's really, really boring, but if you want a psychedelic experience, just go put your nose up, you know, about an inch from a white wall and just stare at it for a while. You know, a painted surface is really, really very quite complicated. It has complex texture and reflectance properties, and these are affected by a variety of different things, the formulation of the paint, the way the paint is applied, and the surface that the paint is applied to. And there are physical processes and visual effects that happen over a wide range of spatial scales. So, but there's the human being is also very key in the touch-up problem. It's, you know, like the tree that falls in the forest. Without a person looking at it, there's no touch-up problem. And touch-up visibility is affected by a number of different things. First is the surface properties, as I mentioned. So there's differences in reflectance and texture of the surfaces. There's the edge between the base and the touch-up region. And these things are affected by the formulation and the application methods. But the environmental conditions also affect the visibility of the touch-up problem. So lighting has a big impact, both the direction of the lighting and whether the lighting is directional or more diffuse. And then the viewing conditions, whether you're looking at the surface normal or obliquely. And so we're trying to understand which factors have the greatest influence on the visibility of the touch-up problem. And so to look at this, we conducted two psychophysical experiments. The first one we're looking at the effects of and the interactions between the formulation, the application methods, the lighting and the viewing condition, and the second one we're looking at the effects of edges between the two regions. And so we had to generate some stimuli to work with. We got 2x2, 2 foot by 2 foot drywall panels from Home Depot. We coated them we put down a spray coat over the whole panel, and then we touched up a central 1 foot square. And using this technique, we created 6 samples. We had 3 different kinds of paint. They were all flat white latex paint, but 3 different kinds. And we used 2 application methods, one where we sprayed the base and then rolled the touch up, and another where we rolled the base and then rolled the touch up over it. So 6 samples. We then photographed these samples under different lighting and viewing conditions. For the lighting, we used a 5x7 LED light box at 60 centimeters from the sample. To simulate viewing, we used a Canon camera, and there's a lot of detail there about the lens and the field of view. But the basic point was we were trying to create images that had all the detail in them that you would be able to see if you were actually standing 60 centimeters from the samples. And so then we photographed these samples under 3 conditions. One where the viewing was from 60 degrees and the lighting came from 72 degrees, so that's a worst case, grazing in both cases. One where the light came from grazing and the viewing was from normal, and the third where it was the opposite. So the viewing was from 60 degrees and the light was coming from normal. And so then we had this set of images. We captured bracketed sets of images using the Canon RAW. We converted these to HDR because we were concerned about dynamic range, but in fact the dynamic range was quite low. We then took these full resolution images and cropped out a central section from those images. We took out the green channel, converted it to grayscale, and then high pass filtered everything to do flat fielding. And so we have three paints, two application methods, three lighting and viewing conditions, and this yields 18 stimulus images we used, and they show a wide range of touch-up differences. So hopefully you can see that's our worst case on the left there and the best one on the right. And so then we show these images to people in pairs, top-bottom on a calibrated monitor. It was a two alternative force choice. We asked people which image has the biggest difference between the two sides. There are 153 pairs, so 153 trials, naive subjects, college students, everybody had normal vision. And so here's the results. We used Thurstonian scaling to derive scales for relative touch-up visibility, and I'll show you each of the different lighting conditions in order. So here's the worst case. So viewing from 60 degrees, lighting from 72 degrees, so grazing in both cases. And first here you can see that there's an effect of the type of paint. Okay, so paint A is not so good, paint C is pretty good, and paint B is somewhere in the middle. So these are the cases where we had the sprayed base and the rolled touch-up. Now if we have the rolled base and the rolled touch-up, you can see that improves things a bit. So they all get slightly better if you have rolled over rolled. Here's the effect of changing the viewing conditions. So now you're looking at the surface normal. It's still lit from the side, so there's still shadowing, but you're looking at it from here. So everything gets compressed a little bit. But the real impact is if you change the lighting conditions. So now lighting is normal, viewing is oblique. And so the take-home message is visibility is affected by all these factors together. There's some improvement with viewing direction, bigger improvement with lighting direction, but everything is still interacting. And that different paints are affected in different ways. Most of them get better as you get to easier conditions, but in fact, paint C got worse. So in the second experiment, we were interested in edge effects. One of the things we noticed is that there's a big, there are often pronounced edges between the base region and the touch-up region. And you can see that here on the left. In the graph here, what we did was we averaged vertically through this section. And what you can see is that there's this profile where, you know, it's kind of noisy, and then it dips, and then there's a peak, and then back to noise again. And so this looks very much like a Craig O'Brien corn suite edge. And so we were wondering, is this operating as well? Is there some kind of enhancement of the differences because of the edge? And so we ran a second experiment where we were trying to look at edge effects. We created four different edge types. One was the normal edge type where we took our sample and just cropped out a center section of it. We created a sharp edge type where we cropped out sections on either side of the edge and then in Photoshop brought them together to create a nice sharp edge. In the blending type, what we did was we took sections on either side of the edge, we overlapped them, and we used alpha blending to smoothly ramp between them. And then we were interested in being able to have not just a relative scale but an absolute scale of touch-up visibility. And so we threw a couple of samples of null edges, so just samples on one side of the edge. And so we had both a sprayed null and a rolled null. And so with three paint types, two applications, one lighting condition, we only used the worst case lighting condition, three edge types and two nulls, we had 20 images. Everything else was the same as in experiment one. And so here's the results from experiment two. So here's the nulls. Okay, so the sprayed base was perceived to be the smoothest or the most uniform. So we normalized everything to that. You can see that the rolled base, even the null one, was perceived to be have more variance. So then here's the normal edge. So this is similar to the first experiment. There's the range of visibility for the normal edge. Here's what happens if you go to a sharp edge. And then here's what happens if you go to a blended edge. And so just to summarize this a little more easily, for paint A, there was some improvement, but this is the paint A was the worst, and so the texture differences between the two sides dominated. So even taking away the edge didn't make much difference. There were paint B and C. In some cases, they were already the touch-up and the base were already pretty good, and so messing with the edge could go one way or the other, depending on what was butted up against each other. A bad edge can really hurt you. So here is a case of paint B. This was the normal case, so this must have had a very bad edge in it, and so removing that edge really improves the situation. And then if you blend your edge as well, what this last case here says is that you can be pretty much near ideal, so the edges won't be visible, the touch-up and the differences won't be visible. Okay, so what have we learned? Well, touch-up visibility is significantly affected by a whole range of things: paint formulation, application methods, the properties of the edges, the lighting conditions, and the viewing conditions. But we're still left with the issue of how do we solve the touch-up problem. And so we really can't do much about the lighting or the viewing conditions. So we're really left with paint formulation, application methods, and edge properties. And the edge properties are a function of the paint formulation and the application methods. So what we're really left with is, what can we do to formulation and application in order to solve this problem? And so what we wanted to do at this point was look at these surfaces in greater depth, try to understand physically what's going on here and the relationship between the physical and the visual. And so the base and the touch-up regions show visible differences in both reflectance and texture. In general, I don't know how well you can see this here, but the touch-up appears lighter and also rougher than the base. And so we were trying to understand what's the relationship between the physical surface properties and these visual appearance properties. So we took the samples, we put them in our Murakami gonio spectrophotometer and measured the VRDFs, the base and the touch-up regions. And so here is the base on the left and the touch-up. This is a sprayed base on the left, rolled touch-up on the right. And what you can see is that at every measurement angle, the touch-up has narrower distributions and also higher distributions. Okay, so what this says is that the touch-up region is glossier than the base region. Okay, narrower and higher. And so these gloss differences are making the touch-up area look lighter than the base. But this is kind of strange because it's the same paint. Why should there be any gloss differences between these two sides? So to understand that, we have to look at the texture. And so we used photometric stereo to measure surface normal maps and did Fourier transforms to derive the power spectra of the base, of the texture on the base and the touch-up regions. And what you can see in the graph here on the right is that the sprayed base area basically has a uniform and wideband spectrum. It's essentially like white noise, right? So spraying produces particles of all different sizes. On the other hand, the touch-up region has more of a bandpass spectrum. There's less energy at the high spatial frequencies and much more energy at the low spatial frequencies. Okay, so the touch-up region has less energy at high spatial frequencies. This means that it's optically smoother, but when we look at it, it's actually visually rougher. Okay, so that's, we have to make a distinction between the physical part and the visual part. So just to summarize what we've learned here, the texture, in terms of texture, the base is, has a broadband spectrum. It's optically rough but visually smooth. The touch-up has a bandpass spectrum. It's optically smooth but visually rough. In terms of reflectance, the base is more matte. It's more Lambertian. And that means it's, the touch-up is more glossy, more specular. And what this translates into is that at grazing angles, the base is darker and the touch-up is lighter. So in terms of understanding the touch-up problem, we understand the visual differences. So the texture, the visible texture differences are due to the application method. But the lightness differences are due to the gloss differences, which in turn are caused by the texture. So there's this kind of funny thing going on. And so what this raises is a really, what I think is a very fundamental question. So we look at surfaces like this, right, painted surfaces. This surface has a structure across a continuum of spatial scales, right? There is no, there's no, aren't distinct categories. And so if we're going to try to characterize this surface in terms of its reflectance properties and its textural properties, where do we make the division, okay? Where do we, you know, we usually model reflectance in terms of BRDF and texture in terms of surface normals or geometry, but where do we put that dividing line? And so one of the situations that we found is that in conventional instruments like gonio spectrophotometers, because they have a certain acceptance angle, they are in fact, if the surface is not completely uniform, you're rolling the texture into the reflectance measurement. And that's what we saw in those gloss differences. And so I'm a computer graphics guy, and we always use geometry and BRDF to do our simulations. And if we divide the world that way, we have this double counting problem where the mesoscale, the textural scale, is being included in both the BRDF, the reflectance, and in the geometry. And so we're continuing to work on this. We're trying to look into scale-neutral measurement and modeling approaches, wavelets and fractals and such things. Our hope is once we have that in hand, we're going to use physically-based computer graphics, which will give us control over the different parameters, reflectance, texture, and edges. And we'll use these in psychophysical experiments to try to understand the touch-up problem and figure out ways to minimize it or mitigate it. So I want to acknowledge that lots of people contributed to this, and also my sponsors, and be happy to answer any questions. So thank you.
Time for a question. Let's do something new there. Sorry.
There's been a thread of work in computer graphics over the last decade or so in terms of working at the sort of boundary between reflectance and texture and kind of transferring. It's really a scale dependent kind of thing. And
sure.
And the most recent work is probably a lean mapping paper from F3D, but there are several papers. I was wondering if you have looked at that work and tried to relate to this problem.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I know of that work. I wouldn't say that I fully internalized it. I mean, some of the math gets quite complicated. And I'm also aware of other, you know, other work going on in that area. But yeah, it's definitely those folks are at the cutting edge. But I don't have any comments beyond that.
Questions to two people actually, to you and to Roy Burns, because I think there's a similarity of problem. I wonder how the interaction of the problems would be between the artistic in painting problem and the touch up problem.
Mm-hmm.
There seem to be some differences in emphasis, but I wonder what you would say is the relationship.
Well, we are in the same lab. We do talk to each other. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of crossover there. I mean, I hadn't particularly thought about in painting, but just, you know, the whole idea of material measurement and trying to understand both the reflectance properties and the textural properties of these of real materials, right? Not just idealized things. It's research, right? So.
Did you want me to respond to you, Mike?
Yeah. No.
In the in-painting, there's a lot of problems that have more to do not with texture, but translucency is often more the issue. One of the things that's done in in-painting is they often will fill in the missing area because the missing paint has a greater depth than the retouching paint. So the retouching paint is very, very thinly applied. So often they're doing texture molds in order to fill in and match the surrounding texture, so that tends to not be an issue. But then the difficulty is in applying the paint sometimes as a multi-layer translucent. So I think that's more of their challenge.
All right, well, Lance, thank you very much again. And